At the top of the show, our election 2013 coverage continues today with a look at the race for mayor in Lansing. Virge Brunero was first elected mayor in 2005. He was reelected in 2009, and he's now running for a third term. In 2010, he was, of course, the Democratic Party nominee for governor, a race he lost to Rick Snyder. He touts a record of balancing budgets without raising taxes. And in the August primary, he got almost 67% of the vote. On November 5th, he's up against former council member Harold Lehman Jr. in the mayor's race, amongst others, Mayor Virge Brunero. Welcome back to Current State.
Thanks, Mark. Happy to be here.
Good to see you.
Likewise. Before
we get to your campaign and the election, let's address this issue involving Auditor Jim DeLine. According to an article in today's Lansing State Journal, DeLine has threatened subpoenas unless he gets more information from your administration pertaining specifically to a pair of contracts valued at what appears to be in the millions of dollars. He says he's asked for information about outside legal services the city purchases and about a contract involving DuPoint, a Lansing-based computer software company. Can you help us understand what's going on here?
Sure. Jim DeLine is the new Lansing City Council auditor. He's new to the job and obviously has a few things to learn. He started off using a little hyperbolic language. I don't hardly believe that the council is going to resort to a subpoena, and that would create all sorts of legal issues. We're happy to share information with Mr. DeLine and the city council. But I can't give information I don't have. He wants reports. I'm not required to create reports, and I don't have the time to do it. I don't have the staff to do it. But he's certainly entitled to the information. The fact is the IT contract is with DuPoint, a local company who has helped us to get up to speed on the latest in IT. As you know, as you can imagine, Mark, so much of what we do, almost everything in city government now is backed up by IT. I've issued an executive order to create an IT department and have a cabinet-level IT director. That's where it's gone. I mean, this is not the 1950s, 60s, or 70s, and so we're moving forward, and I'm happy to share with him the information, how much we've spent and who the money went to, but I don't have time necessarily to create this report or that report immediately on his time frame.
So you don't intend to withhold any information.
Exactly.
Here it's just a timeline that you claim you cannot, you can't necessarily keep up with.
Exactly. Well, I mean, again, you could go through all of the minutes and stuff. You'll find there a lot of people, the council wants a report on this and a report on that. They have the staff. They can create a report. I'll give them the information. I can't necessarily create a report. I'm not Plante Moran, you know. And we comply with an annual audit, by the way, an outside auditor every year to make sure that the books are properly done. So this is politics. You know, it's just before the election. We're here to discuss the election, I think. And this is more electioneering. He answers directly to Carol Wood, who's the council president. And so this isn't some independent. Let's be clear.
That's relevant here. He's an employee of the city council.
He answers on a daily basis to Carol Wood, as you know, who's my political nemesis. So this is designed to create some political hoo-ha. I'm happy to cooperate, though, and give any and all information that I have on these issues. But again, I don't necessarily have time to create Jim DeLine's report. And, you know, online he says that his audit is incomplete. Imagine a situation, Mark, where I have to comply with, like, weekly audits because the auditor, see, he's taken his name out of context. He's the city council auditor. Well, he's to audit things, to look at things, to oversee whatever, give them information. But I have to comply already with an annual audit from the outside. I don't have time. If Carol Wood had her way, I would do nothing but answer Carol Wood's questions day in and day out. My department heads would be in front of her committees every day. And we wouldn't be able to get the business of the city done. This is not Chicago or New York. I have a few employees to do a lot of very important jobs.
Let's clarify one thing, though. I mean, who in your administration is the person responsible for getting that information to Mr. DeLine?
Chad Gamble and Randy Hannon.
Okay. This is millions of dollars we're talking about.
Absolutely.
Here in contract.
Absolutely.
In contracts,
you know, we spend something like $180 million a year, and a lot of it is backed up by IT. It's no secret, Mark. I issued an executive order. I invite you to take a look at it. I'm sure it's online. I'm creating a department of IT. I've made it very clear. And Carol Wood has yet to hold one hearing on my executive order. I'm happy to go in and discuss with her part and parcel my entire package, my entire plan. She has yet to hold one hearing. Of all the meetings Carol Wood, the control freak, holds, she hasn't asked for one meeting. She has refused to put it on the agenda. And I'd be happy to go in and tell her exactly what my plans are for the Department of IT and the necessity for it and how we're spending the money.
You seem to be suggesting, well, let's finish this point and then we'll move on to the campaign. Are timelines different? I mean, it would appear you're suggesting that timelines are different than they used to be. That when with fewer personnel working in City Hall, that it takes longer to get work done.
No question. Yeah. Again, we have to prioritize. It's a matter of priority, Mark. And so when I get calls from constituents, when I have potholes to fill, I have jobs to do, I have the IT department to fix, that is my priority. And it's true that answering the particular questions and getting reports ready for the city council comes secondary to actually doing the work.
Let's move on to the campaign for mayor. We've been opening our segments here, our interviews, with this question. If you're reelected, what single challenge facing the city of Lansing would you most like to help solve in another term, and why?
Well, of course, getting the financial picture right is the first priority, and that's why I appointed the FHT, the financial health team, which was chaired by Mayor Hollister and led by some of the leading business people of the Lansing region. We now have the FHT report. That's not the end. That's the beginning, right? Because this report is recommendations on what we need to do to avoid a Detroit, Flint, or Pontiac-type situation where we would be facing bankruptcy. So now the real work begins. We have the report. We have the blueprint for our financial health, and now it's implementing that over the next 4 years. That's number one. Number two, the real frontier, I have to say, the real frontier for this next the next term is regionalism. Developing, and we've talked about this before, a functioning definition of regionalism. We have plenty of examples of where regionalism and metro approach doesn't work, principally Metro Detroit. When people have said the term Metro Detroit, where are you from? Well, I'm from Metro Detroit. That has meant not Detroit. Metro really was a euphemism for not Detroit. Mm-hmm. I live in the Detroit area, but there was no functioning metro region, and consequently, we see what happens mm-hmm. ultimately. And that's more or less the case. We've talked about this many times, Mark. The hole in the donut approach to our cities in Michigan. Our cities tend to be the hole in the donut as opposed to the hub of the wheel. If we don't fix that in Lansing, if we start to refer to the Lansing region like Metro Detroit was referred to, then ultimately, that's what we'll look like.
Are there long-term financial health team recommendations here that you want included in the next budget?
Well, there will be some. There's no question. And, of course, one of the biggest things we're doing, Mark, I just negotiated the UAW contract. A lot of those things that they recommended have to be negotiated in our labor contracts. And so we just finished very productive negotiations with the UAW, and that contract was ratified. And it has substantive changes in terms of legacy cost. Much of the FHT report dealt with some of the most important, significant recommendations were in regards to legacy cost, long-term health care cost, and pension obligations for our retirees. We are beginning to address that now with our labor contracts. I have finalized the UAW contract. I have Teamsters and firefighters coming up. And then in the next year or two, the police, the Fraternal Order of Police after that. And so many of the FHT recommendations will be addressed at the bargaining table.
It's been tougher with the police than it has with the fire department. Do you expect that pattern to continue?
I don't know. Of course, I mean, now it'll get time to their actual contract. See, in the past, we've been trying to negotiate concessions and trying to get sort of reopeners in the contract. And the FOP's position was they're not going to reopen the contract, and if you need to lay us off. Well, now it's going to be the actual contract being renegotiated. So,
sure.
I mean, I look forward to fruitful negotiations, and I presume they will negotiate in good faith.
That's an opportunity that you haven't had before.
Bingo.
Let's listen to challenger Harold Lehman here. He is one of your challengers for the mayor. He goes into the cost that Lansing neighborhoods have paid recently.
I'm for fiscal responsibility in dealing with the long-term debt of this city. But I want to focus in on neighborhoods and business corridors. They have been neglected for these big high item issues that get a lot of publicity, but as you can see, the downtown, yes, it is being redeveloped, but at the expense of the rest of the city.
Okay, we want to mention that came from the LansingStateJournal.com, by the way. How do you respond to this accusation that neighborhoods are being neglected for the downtown?
Yeah, I like Harold, but of course that's absolute nonsense. For years we've heard this, you know, what about the neighbors, what about the neighbors? Well, I've heard that plea, and I live in the neighborhoods, by the way, as do my children, live in Lansing and in Lansing neighborhoods. And, you know, we've put something like $30 million into the neighborhoods through the Neighborhood Stabilization Program with President Obama, and we've worked cooperatively with the treasurer, the county treasurer, the land bank. We have done absolute historic. We have moved mountains in our neighborhoods. Now, are they challenged? Absolutely. And Harold knows this. I mean, any aging city has aging infrastructure and aging housing stock. It is a challenge. But you know the number one thing we can do for our neighborhoods, Mark? The number one thing? Of course, I don't run the schools. That could affect them. But the number one thing I can do as mayor is to bring jobs to the city. Because when you bring jobs to the city and people are working, then they have the money to buy a house. They have the money to keep their house up. You know, the reason why neighborhoods are in trouble in some cases is because people, we have the foreclosure crisis, which is a national epidemic. People don't have the money. When people aren't working, if you're busy trying to put food on the table and feed yourself and feed your children, you don't have the extra money to re-side your house or to fix that chimney that's falling down. I don't believe that people want to live in squalor. I don't think that people want to let their house deteriorate, and they certainly don't want to lose their house, but they are unemployed. We have an unemployment crisis. The fact is there are a lot of people who are unemployed or underemployed. And that's why I have focused like a laser on bringing jobs to this community. And I've been successful. I brought $1 billion in new investment to this community, and I'm damn proud of it. General Motors is expanding here. I fought like hell to save GM, and they are expanding here. The CTS is doing great. All their products are doing great. And the Chevy Camaro is coming here from Canada. The GM could have brought that car to any place in the world, and they're bringing the Camaro to Lansing, Michigan. And that's going to mean jobs for Lansing residents, and that's going to equal improvements in our neighborhoods.
You alluded to the schools a minute ago. Let's talk about school district for just a second. It's no secret that the district has had its share of financial hardships. Should the role the city plays with regard to the Lansing School District change? After all, as you point out, its health is a major factor here in attracting and retaining families.
Look, I work closely with Yvonne, the superintendent of Lansing Schools, and I will continue to do so. I have always worked closely and supported the Lansing School District. You know, as you know, I put community liaison officers in the high schools at my cost, at the cost to the city, because I believe that the safety in the schools is my responsibility, just as the safety in the community. They're part of the community, and so I've adapted that. We've wrapped our arms around the school. We partner with them in a number of ways, and we will continue to do so. The Lansing School District has shrunk. They've lost students, and as they have, as they've closed buildings, we have been very successful. You want to talk about neighborhoods, Mark? By the way, this ties into the other question, because we've been very successful in bringing businesses into those schools and repurposing those schools so that they don't sit empty and become magnets for crime. We've been very successful. And, of course, those companies, Neogen, Niowave, and others, we have one coming into to Moores River, Moores Park neighborhood. We've been very successful at repurposing those buildings and growing our economy. So it's a fact of life. You know, inner city, urban school districts are challenged. Lansing is no different. We will continue to partner with our schools to make sure that the school district, although it may be smaller, is one of quality and one of excellence.
Now, this connects back to the financial health team's report, because they made particular recommendations in terms of merging city resources with school district resources. Where is that discussion right now? And can you give us any more detail on where you'd like to take that?
It's ongoing, and some of those things are very basic and very simple. You know, like when we're mowing a park, I think we have 7 or 8 parks, Lansing City parks, that are adjacent to, actually connected to, Lansing playgrounds, Lansing School playgrounds, for example. So some of the negotiations are as simple as just let's have one of us mow the park. Instead of our group, we go out and mow our section, and then they come out and mow their section. Just, you know, contract it out, have one or the other do it. And then, you know, to things like sharing a building. You know, we're looking down the road at potentially having to replace Lansing City Hall, either pump millions into fixing it because it needs major, major repairs and upgrading.
What would you like to see happen there?
I want to see a thorough study that says I need to see what it would cost to stay in City Hall. You see, it gets to a point, Mark, that building was built between 54 and 58. and its major systems are failing. The plumbing, the HVAC, the windows leak. So there's going to be major repairs necessary to stay, if we decide to stay there. But it's also a bigger building than we now need. And so as we are about 30% smaller. So the question is, where do we go? We have to study that. And then it so happens that the school district is also studying their administration building. They're trying to sell it, and they're thinking about it. And so one of the questions I think the FHD mentioned was potentially maybe even sharing an administration building.
Right.
If you think about, I mean, we both have a boardroom or a kiva where the legislative body meets. That could be on the ground floor, and it could be the names could change. They meet on a different night. And so we could share an auditorium, for example, instead of each having
You
one.
Like that.
I like consolidation. I like collaboration. I think we could consolidate in other ways with local units of government. I mean, imagine if Lansing and East Lansing and Lansing Township were one city instead of three. I mean, we wouldn't be two times the city. We'd be 10 times the city. We'd look more like Indianapolis or Madison. I think there's a lot of possibilities for consolidation if people can get over, you know, kind of the small thinking and the parochialism and the, you know, get over some of the antiquated Byzantine structures that we're married to.
Well, a lot of the people in these outlying jurisdictions, though, end up saying, hey, you're really the net, you really, the city of Lansing is really the beneficiary of any regional consolidation. It would outweigh anything that, say, the city of East Lansing.
Yeah, that's nonsense.
Might,
that's absolute poppycock.
How is that?
That's
nonsense.
Absolute poppycock. That's absolutely misguided nonsense. The fact is, because if you look at Indianapolis, Madison, Louisville, the entire region is gaining. And the fact is, we are losing, we are hemorrhaging our young people. That's why I say this is the next frontier for the next term. We're going to have a spirited dialogue about this. So I look forward to it, and I'd suggest you and your colleagues do some research on it and find out what's happening in Indianapolis and these other places where they've consolidated, because what they have is growth, and what they have is retention of their young talent. We are hemorrhaging our young talent. And you can crow, and different communities can crow about this and that, but the fact is we attract our young people here. They come to great universities like Michigan State University, and when they matriculate, they leave. They leave, and they are leaving in droves. We have a massive exodus of our young talent. It is a pocket on all of our houses, and all of our houses would be better served by a functioning definition of metro government, a functioning definition of regionalism that allows us to become the great region that we should be.
Fourth Ward candidate Chong Anna Canfora for the city council was here 2 weeks ago with the incumbent that you support, Jessica Yorko, and we were talking about funding for public safety here in Lansing. Here's what Canfora proposed regarding the shortfalls that end up impacting, the revenue shortfalls that end up impacting public safety budgets.
Part of the solution is that I would close tax loopholes for CEOs that are coming to the city with their hands out looking for tax abatements with no accountability. I think that it's incredibly important in order to retain the revenues and have the resources to, maintain our public safety net, that we can't be just giving away, revenue opportunities to any CEO that has their hand out and then demands in return that there be no accountability, no transparency.
You got a laugh out of that.
Oh,
tell us why.
Well, her naivete is incredible. She has no idea what she's talking about. Obviously, she's never done any serious economic development. She's obviously never negotiated with one of these terrible, big, bad CEOs that she wants to beat up. So I pray to God that that doesn't become the voice in the face of the city of Lansing. I'm trying to attract jobs. I'm trying to grow this economy, and I have a tremendous track record in doing that. It's obvious she's never engaged in anything like this. We have to open our arms. We have to put down the welcome mat for business. And it's that kind of anti-business animus that will cost us jobs, that will hurt this city and this region.
What kind of long-term metrics are in place to measure whether some of these projects are really beneficial for the city? Like thinking of Jackson National Life.
Yeah, let's talk about Jackson National Life. Dave Hollister negotiated a 425. We gain millions by Jackson National being here. The 425 is a tax-sharing agreement. So even though technically they're in Aladdin Township, the city of Lansing gets property tax and income tax revenue from that that building. And they have something like 1,000 employees now. They're going to add 1,000 employees. They're going to build a $100 million expansion. There'll be construction jobs, and then there'll be good jobs after that. You'll have to talk to Bob Trzais at Leap. Leap keeps tracks. They keep metrics on all of this. So they follow up to see to what we got. But what we're getting, it's costing us nothing. The J&L expansion in Allendale Township is costing the city of Lansing zero, goose egg, and we're gaining hundreds of thousands of dollars in tax revenue, if of course millions over the years.
I mean, infrastructure has to be built out for these outlying locations, right?
It's essentially there for Allendale now. That happened under Hollister. So now we simply extended the 425. And when she talks about CEOs having their hands out, this is what I mean about she has no idea what she's talking about. Because the fact is, it's a global economy now today. Hello, it's a global economy. So Jackson National Life is an international company. They can go anywhere. We were competing for Nashville for that building. And that easily could have gone to Nashville, easily. The CEO happens to have a home in Nashville and a home in Okemos. He does not need to be here in Lansing, okay? So we were negotiating and competing, and that's the way it is with a lot of these companies. You know, Niowave Company is looking forward to an expansion. Neogen, Emergent BioSolutions. Emergent BioSolutions has operations in Baltimore. They don't have to be in Lansing, Michigan. Mm-hmm. These global operations have options, and that's why if you start trying to beat them up, like with some of the language that Chung Anna was using, they simply will not be here. They don't have to be here. It's a global economy, and you may or may not like it, but that's the way it is.
I mean, in a perfect world, though, wouldn't Jackson National have stayed downtown the same way the accident fund stayed in downtown?
Yes, you said the key thing. And, of course, when it's possible, we do that. I negotiated the accident fund and getting them downtown. Of course, I want to keep them in the city proper. But Hollister made the decision. Obviously, J&L had made up their mind. They wanted their own campus. They wanted a big space to spread out. And there they are. And he made it a win-win. I give Dave Hollister enormous credit for recognizing that. He made what would normally be called sprawl, and he turned it into something that served the city of Lansing residents. He made it a win-win. If a company is bound and determined to leave the city to get their own big campus, like a Delta Dental, for example, or other companies where they want their own big campus, you have to find a way to make it work. If we can squeeze them in somewhere in the city, we will do it. If we can get them to build up as opposed to building out, we will certainly do that. But you can't put a square peg in a round hole. And as I say, the way Chung Anna talks, it's obvious she has no experience in working with business and actually working in the business of economic development and job attraction and job retention. That's the business we're in the city of Lansing. We've been wildly successful at it, particularly compared to other cities, and I intend to keep our winning streak going and keep our people working.
It was reported last week that the state's investigating an allegation that your campaign made larger than normal payments to two campaign aides back in June, and that those two aides ended up making contributions to the city council campaign of Kathy Dunbar. The insinuation here is that you were improperly funneling money from your campaign to hers. Now, you're on record as calling these allegations 11th hour negative campaign tactics, but it appeared the timing raised some red flags. Where does that stand right now?
Well, look, we're working to comply. I endeavor to comply with any and all campaign finance laws. I always have. I've been at this business a long time. I've been a legislative aide, and now I'm an elected official. And you know, Mark, I have often given to campaigns that I was working on. I think that's a regular practice in this town. It's not uncommon that people who are working in campaigns, who are engaged in politics, not only do they give of their blood, sweat, and tears, knocking on doors and making calls, but they often actually give back and actually write checks to the campaigns that they're involved in. And these folks believe in these campaigns. They believe in our effort, and it's their business if they choose to give to the campaigns. And many of my staff have given, by the way, over at City Hall. They've given to the campaign because they know these candidates. They know Kathy Dunbar. They know Jessica Yorko. They believe in them, and it is their legal right to give. And so I believe that we will continue to comply, and I believe that we'll be cleared completely.
Now,
I think it is politics.
Now, you are supposed to formally respond by tomorrow. Have you done so already?
We've been given an extension, and we will comply with all laws, and we will respond by November 22nd.
November 22nd.
That's
are
right.
You willing to share any more of what your response will be with our listeners, or is that just too far down the road?
No, you essentially have my response, which is that we believe we complied with the law and that these folks gave of their own volition. They get a paycheck, or they get paid, and they get a paycheck, and it's up to them how they spend it, and they spend it as they saw fit.
You want Brian Jeffries to lose his at-large seat on the council, but the council already failed to override your budget vetoes earlier this year. Do you really need a stronger, more allied council behind you?
Yeah, well, I want progress for the city, Mark. People say I've been called a bull in a china shop, and you know what? With all the challenges that cities face today, you darn well better hope that you got a bull leading the city. Because there's every reason why cities fail. When you look at Pontiac, Flint, Detroit, Benton Harbor, Hamtramck, when you look at cities that have gone under, it's not just failed leadership. You've got the cards stacked against you today. So many of our cities are the hole in the donut instead of the hub of the wheel. I'm trying to make Lansing the hub of the wheel. I'm trying to bring us back, and I think I've made tremendous progress in spite of the odds. I don't mind that I have to get up in the morning every day and climb a major hill, climb a mountain every morning, every day. I don't mind that. I don't complain about it, but it's about that nail in my shoe that I'd like removed, and that nail is named Brian Jeffries. I need help. I need support. I don't need obstacles to progress. Brian Jeffries has been on the council for 10 years. If people can find some constructive things that he's done, something that he's brought to the table that no other council member has, if he's earned the right, then by God, bring him back. But I need my team, just like Barack Obama needs a team. He doesn't need John Boehner there fighting him every day. Do you think that he could work with John Boehner? Do you think he hasn't extended the olive branch, golfed with him, taken him to lunch, invited him to the White House, and yet John Boehner still opposes him? Well, my John Boehner is Brian Jeffries. He's against what I'm for, plain and simple. So I ask people to think about it. If you want Virge Bernero, if you want my leadership, if you want my agenda, and you damn well better believe I have an agenda. It's an agenda of growth and an agenda of progress. I don't need people slowing me down. I don't need that nail in my shoe. I need Brian Jeffries gone. And we have a much better choice in the persons of Kathy Dunbar and Judy Brown Clark.
And how do you respond to critics, though, who say that you'd steamroll the city council without members like Jeffries and Carolyn?
Well, I don't need five of them, and I certainly don't need Carolyn Bryant together. Chaos and control. I don't need them together. They're a terrible match. And in 10 years of council, you've got to be able to say something more than, I did everything I could to stop the mayor. I was a fly in the ointment on every major project. It's unnecessary. He does not add value. You know, he's my neighbor. He lives four or five doors down. He's a wonderful neighbor. He keeps a great yard. I'm sure he's a wonderful husband. He's just a terrible councilman.
Moving away from the election just a little bit, the silence from the Red Cedar Project has become almost deafening. Where does that stand? What's been hanging this thing up?
Well, Mark,
if you can share that,
consider it the calm before the storm. And when I say storm, this time I mean in a very great sense of the word. You know how some of those summer storms sometimes it comes through and then it brings a nice, better, cooler weather? It's going to be phenomenal. I look at Red Cedar. I see the incredible potential. I'm so grateful that the citizens of Lansing had faith in my vision. I asked them, you know, I closed two golf courses because we just didn't have the money. We were hemorrhaging. We were losing money on those. And you know, one of the ways that cities go bankrupt is when a city does shrink a little bit in size, they try to keep doing all the same things. You know, Lansing was once a city of 150,000. Now it's 115,000. It's leveled off. It's plateaued. We're not losing population anymore. But we can't do all the things we used to do. And so now we have two golf courses instead of four. We didn't need four. And, of course, Red Cedar is very strategically located. It's an incredible opportunity to maintain some green space, have a nice park that people can enjoy, have a nice transition area between geographically between East Lansing and Lansing, you know, to ease the border there and invite people, have an inviting entranceway into the city, and also do some things there, provide some services, have some economic activity. And so we're very excited about it. It's a big project. There's a lot of moving parts. There's a number of different private entities involved. And so what I can say, Mark, I know that people are impatient. All I can say is stay tuned. It's going to be phenomenal.
Virge Bernero is the incumbent candidate for Lansing mayor. We all go to the polls next Tuesday. Virge, thank you. And as with all the candidates, current state commends you for your willingness to serve and for taking time to join us today.
Thanks so much, Mark.
Good luck.
Appreciate it.